This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Thanks again for tuning in and listening to this week's podcast, as you do from week to week, and I appreciate you also going back in the archives and digging out some of the very interesting things that are there as well. One of them happened to be back in episode 341 in January of 2017. I spoke with Dick Brooks and Dorothy Dietrich, who at the time had a Kickstarter campaign going to raise some funds for a new Houdiniopoly. It was kind of like a Monopoly board, basically, with a Houdini theme, and if you had donated so much money that they would put your name on the board, you can actually sponsor some of the pieces. Some of the cards would have your names on it, or your name would be on the box, et cetera, et cetera. Anyhow, after many, well, some years, because it was leading up to that point of putting this thing, this idea together, so this was years in the making, and I know they had even rolled this out, I think, at an SAM convention a few years back, and I know they had started to raise some funds then, and some of the people who had invested were worried and wondering when this was actually going to come out. Well, the reason I'm mentioning that now is because it's here. I just got my board game this week. They had sent out the board pieces some time ago, I don't know, about 6 months ago or so. So I have got those then as well. But now I have the actual board game, and it's spectacular. They did a great job. So I just wanted to thank them. And if you want to go back and hear more information about that and how to perhaps order a copy of the game, if I'm sure they have some additional ones available, they weren't just available to those who had pre-ordered. I'm sure they have some there also. Just go back again, and there's some information on that episode number 341. So if you go back in the archives, you can listen to that, and you can go to the blog, and I'm sure it has some information there where you can go to their website, you can go to their email, and get hold of them. It's really pretty cool. Also, second thing, personal follow-up. I want to thank so many people who have contacted me following the passing of my wife on May the 2nd. I had a service, a celebration of life service this past Saturday on May the 12th, and that was phenomenal. We had just had about 200 people who were there, and it was a great celebration. We had the bagpipe player as well as a harp player with a reception that followed, and Ian Rowland had written a poem especially for Kathy that I had published on the back page of the program. So I want to thank publicly here Ian, but also to thank all of the well, over 1,000 people who had posted on my Facebook page, those who have sent texts, those who had contacted me either by, on FaceTime to chat for a bit, made phone calls and whatever else, and have sent your prayers and thoughts and condolences. And I sincerely appreciate that. And that's been helping in the grieving process this week. In fact, on May 16th, which would have been yesterday, I believe then today is May the 17th when this is being released, would have been our 43rd wedding anniversary. And I also want to say that if you are interested in going back and actually watching the service or listening to that, I had live streamed that on my Facebook page. And if you want to go back and see that, I also had a presentation that Jamie Salinas had put together, a slideshow presentation that also had some music to accompany it. And that is also available in a link through my Facebook page as well. Well, enough of that. I just want to say thank you to the listeners all over the world who, whether you have sent your condolences or not, I can feel you out there. So thank you. Thank you very much. So again, thank you, and let's move on to this week's podcast. When I was at the 4F convention, Obie's 4F convention here recently, I had an opportunity to sit down and to chat with a few guys to have a more extended conversation that I recorded that I know that you would like to hear some of their ideas. And these are some of the movers and shakers and creative guys in our art, and I know that you will enjoy listening to them. The first one up here this week is Mr. Michael Vincent. Michael is a longtime friend of mine. In fact, when he came through the U.S. one time when he was lecturing here in Houston, Texas, I oftentimes will have lecturers stay here at my house. In this particular case, I actually hosted his lecture in my house. So he stood in front of the fireplace there, and at the in our living room, and we had chairs set up, and we had a good turnout. One of the better lectures that we've had, and it was a lot of fun, well attended, and we got to be good mates. And he has a lot to offer. And it was kind of interesting, also, of course, that you have heard that he had lost his hearing, and that's something that we discuss in this podcast then as well. So we get a little bit personal about some things. It's not just about magic. And also, one of the people he talks about is Jason LaDani. And Jason is a magician who's on a lecture tour, and he's going across the U.S. here in June and July. And if you have an opportunity to see him in your town, be sure to check him out. Michael really speaks highly of him here in this podcast, so be sure to see his lecture. He's phenomenal as well. So from one card magician to another one, he's giving him some good accolades. So there is a lot to discuss and a lot to hear this week. But if you stick around until the end of the podcast, I'm going to do a quick review of a trick called Key Prediction, which is available from your favorite magic dealer through Murphy's Magic Supplies. But first, let's hear from our good friend all the way from across the pond over in England, Michael Vincent, this week on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for TheMagicWordPodcast.com, and I am here today with a friend that I've known for many years and have welcomed into my home for a special lecture that he had given us some years ago. And you guys are going to benefit from learning a lot by just listening to our conversation today. He's here all the way from, I say here, actually he's not in my home in Houston right now because I'm recording this out in New York when we're at the 4F convention, and he came over from London. Please welcome Michael Vincent. Hi there, Michael.
Hi there, Scott. It's wonderful to see you again.
Thank you. Thank you. Always good to spend some time with you. I've been following you a little bit, through Facebook and everything, and what you've been up to and what you've been doing.
Well, it's funny you mention Facebook because I've really had to learn how to leverage my offline activity with creating a very strong online presence. Not just as a magician, but also as an entrepreneur, businessman, and as a global personality. Because let's face it, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, these are platforms now.
Correct.
Which, if Andy Warhol was alive today, he would have said, see, I told you, everybody will have their 15 minutes of fame. We are now in the look at me generation.
Yes.
This is it. This is the revolution of the individual.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The revolution of the individual. You know, years ago in the U.S., we had, of course, Saturday Evening Post magazine and all this. We had Look magazine and then Life magazine. And back then, the title, I think, kind of said it all. I really haven't talked to anybody about this before, but it's just my thinking that, Look and Life magazine were looking at the lives of other people and what's going on in the world, how your life interacts, with the world, basically. And then it came out with the magazine People, in which we were then focusing more not just on world events and history and what was happening, but also on individuals with people. And then they had Us magazine, which started to become more introspective. It's kind of like you and me. And so it seems like that even with magazines and with the industry, it has slowly gone from a global kind of vision of looking at what's going on to more of, you're exactly right, Michael, a me generation. And, with selfies being, even the word selfies in the dictionary now, and those kinds of things.
Exactly, yes. And what does it all mean in the final analysis? It's just part of the natural evolution of life.
That's true.
Of people.
Yeah.
And I'll share something from my life, which is not magic related, because I can see what I've learned from this context of my life and how it applies to being a magician and the world. I'm a student of Anthony Robbins.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a student of personal development. And if there's one thing I've learned from Tony Robbins, one of the most powerful needs of the human being is a desire for significance, to feel important.
Of course.
That's literally what it means.
Yeah.
And here we are now in a revolution of the individual where significance is literally becoming one of the major core values of people around the world, particularly young people.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's an incredible platform where they can share themselves, irrespective of their subject matter. It doesn't matter. It's, hey guys, look at me. I'm surfing. I'm right. Skateboarding. I'm eating at this restaurant. I'm doing these cool, fancy card tricks. Uh-huh. I'm astounded of the number of people, literally on Instagram alone, who are engaged in subjects that I'm interested in.
Yeah.
Origami, Lego, card magic, personal development. I'm also a passionate photographer. So I've now built communities with people I've never met.
Right.
But who are connecting with me. Why? Because I'm sharing things that they are also interested in.
That you're passionate about, and you find other people who have the same passion.
Yes.
And you get a, well, which is a lot like what this 4F convention's about.
Of exactly.
People who specifically like close-up yeah. magic as opposed to general magic
yes.
or whatever. But you're right. I think that there are more of a... Well, I think, though, Michael, that is no different than any other generation since the dawn of man. I think from the standpoint that everyone wants to express their individual... person or individualism
exactly.
some way or another, you know, whether it's having tattoos or coloring your hair blue or whatever it is, you know, or you know, gothic, whatever it is. I mean, people are trying to do something that will be recognizable. And more so, particularly, we talk about young people. I was the same way. Everybody was from the standpoint when you're young, you're trying to stand out a little bit and from the rest of your crowd if you're in your school, you know, in junior high in particular and in high school. So I think that it's just gotten, to me, I guess, more extreme than what it was. You have more avenues to express yourself.
I just got present to something listening to you talk there, Scott. What has expanded rapidly for the individual is the immediacy of their self-expression mm-hmm. in the world mm-hmm. and how quickly that expression can have an impact. Why? Because of the platforms available to us now where we can say, hey, guys, look at me. Look at what I'm doing. I've just done this. I've just experienced that.
Right.
And you can get immediate feedback.
Right. Through likes or through comments.
Whatever.
Yes.
Whatever,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this is something very powerful. The speed at which we can get immediate feedback comes down to the quality of the hashtag. You know what I mean by that?
I do.
So the hashtag... And whatever phrase you put afterwards will determine who sees you and what you're doing.
That's right.
Quickly.
Right.
Oh, my goodness. When I was a kid, I had to wait several weeks before I got a letter or a reply from yeah. a magician that I'd written to.
Right.
So now it's as fast as an email. If I read a book on magic or any subject that I'm interested in and the author has the good sense to put their email in the book that yes. I just purchased, guess what? They're going to hear from me.
Yes.
Classic mm-hmm. example. 2 weeks ago, I was in Krakow mm-hmm. to do some work teaching magic to the Polish magicians.
Okay.
Before I left to go there, I realized I'm only like 40 minutes from Auschwitz, the mm-hmm. concentration camp. Mm-hmm. And it dawned on me, Michael, you know what the place is, but you don't know much about it.
Other than what you've seen in the movies or read in the books.
And exactly, history. In history and
sure.
at school.
Yeah, yeah.
So I bought a book.
Uh-huh.
And I happened to buy a book from an English gentleman who worked for the BBC. His name's Lawrence Rees. And he was like head of control and head of TV programming. And he made a series of programs called The Final Solution. I mean, it was an extraordinary achievement. And I wow. read his book. Mm-hmm. It's as big as the Holy Bible.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
But I finished it in a week. Why? Because it was compelling.
Mm-hmm.
I never really paid much attention to World War II, but I'm interested in it now.
It opened your eyes.
It certainly did. Huh. Not because of the war, but I was interested to understand what was the source that made the war happen? Why?
Mm-hmm.
What was the thought process of the individuals in Europe to invade another country, to give birth to the concentration camps? What was the belief system, the values?
Did they get into all that then too?
Well, I was curious. I wanted to see if there was anything between the lines that I could dissect for myself. I really wanted to understand the country I was going into and why it suffered so much.
Right.
Poland.
Mm-hmm.
And I sent an email to Lawrence Rees.
Oh, you did? And?
I got a reply.
Wow.
I thanked him for writing this book.
Yeah.
I said it's a very important book because as we march on into the history of things, there's every possibility that children being born today will only know about what happened through the pages of history. And even if they read it, will it have as much impact on them, let's say, 10, 20 years down the road?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
At least my generation, I can say, my God, it was only, let's see, 40, it was only 25 years off before my birth, give or take,
right,
when this happened. So it's still, it feels relatively new to me.
Right.
It's 70 years now since. Mm-hmm. So he emailed me back. He thanked me for taking the time to message him. I told him who I was and why I was going there and why I needed to read his book, because I wanted to get a sense of the place through his eyes.
Right.
And when I got there, Scott, let me tell you.
It was chilling.
It was haunting. It was sobering.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a photojournalist alongside being a magician.
Mm-hmm.
I love taking photographs that tell a story.
Right. You use black and white or color?
Well, for this subject, yes.
Black and white.
I just thought black and white.
Yeah.
So, and with deep contrast to create the mood, because it's still there. Mm-hmm. I looked around and I said, okay, Michael, don't just shoot for the sake of photographing. Create images that can stand on its own and tell a story.
Mm-hmm.
So that when someone looks at it, they know or they will feel there's something unusual about this image. And then they'll get it. I'll show an image to you when we're done. And I'm going to be honest with you. My friends and my client, they were in a very somber mood.
Yeah.
I was thinking like a photojournalist. It's not to say I was not sad or disrespectful. I was very respectful of where I was and the images I was creating. I was very quiet. I didn't say much because I can't hear anything. I'm deaf.
Mm-hmm.
So it was pointless me trying to listen to the tour guide talking through the microphones. I wouldn't hear anything. So I created my own narrative. I imagined hundreds and thousands of Jewish people in striped pajamas surrounded me. I could see them in my imagination.
Mercy.
And as I went through the various corridors, creating images, when I went over to Auschwitz to Birkenau and saw the barracks where they slept, I saw the images, I saw the ovens, I saw the chimney. These all tell me what I knew and what I felt about this place.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Why am I sharing this? It's all about the immediacy of the world we live in. As a photojournalist, I shared these images not to talk about the horror of what happened. I shared those images to pinpoint, to get people present to. One image in particular was of the cart that carried the Jews over 2,000 kilometers from one part of Europe to Poland. And I just said, imagine standing in this carriage for 2,000 kilometers and it's freezing cold, it's snowing outside.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And you arrive at this place. Take it from me. The snow and the cold weather was the least of their problems, because as soon as they got off this cart, the people to the right lived. The people to the left went straight to the ovens. So
wow.
That was the least of their problems. So my point in this is, we've reached a point in history now where we really need to celebrate the liberty that we have, because there was a generation of people who had it taken away. And the only reminder that they were a human being was the tattooed number on their arm.
Right.
So.
And as I understand that, the reason with the tattoos was because that the Jews are not supposed to have tattoos. And so the Germans had done that in order to humiliate them.
Well,
I
don't know about that particular fact, and that's worth me researching, and I will. But I will say one thing. To be reduced to the level of a number and to have your possessions taken, your head shaved, and your entire existence reduced to nothing. Okay. What next? Mm-hmm. What happens now? Who am I?
They beat you down and beat you down. Well, that's what they do, I think, with prisoners, too. Of course, in prison, that they give you just a number.
You
have to wear a suit and everything, and they try to dehumanize you as well.
Yes, that's the key phrase that came out, the dehumanization. And as I was walking around, I thought of the three people in my knowledge who came to this place but left something significant behind.
Mm-hmm.
Anne Frank left her diary.
Right.
Viktor Frankl survived and wrote the book, A Man's Search for Meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And he documented his thoughts and observations of what happens to a human being when they come to this place and the stages that they go through from shock, horror, resignation, apathy, and then they just give up because they have lost the will to meaning. They've lost what life meant for them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he realized there was one part of the human soul and psyche that can never be touched by external circumstances. And it was this: no matter what happens, can you keep the presence of mind and realize that the meaning I give to this experience is what shapes my experience of reality? So how did he survive? While he was doing the death march in the cold, he said, "One day, if I survive this, I will be standing in a beautiful theater. The audience will be sat on beautiful velvet-colored seats, and they will listen to me talk and share my experiences as a survivor of this horrible place."
So he just thought of a future. So he, rather than giving up, he still...
He created this little fantasy in his mind.
Uh-huh.
And he held on to an image of his wife and what she would have thought in terms of how he conducted himself in this horrible place. So he tried his best to maintain a sense of purpose and dignity. What did this give me for myself as someone who lost his hearing? I went deaf overnight. You know what I said to myself, Scott? I said, "Michael, get a grip. You've lost your hearing. You will adjust and you'll make do. You'll be fine."
Mm-hmm.
There are some people in the world who can't get out of bed. You can get out of bed. You can brush your teeth. You can take a shower. You can cook a meal. You can practice great card tricks. And fortunately, I can still entertain an audience.
That's true.
And I can still press a button and take a camera. I am richly blessed. And here's the funny thing, Scott. I had to lose my hearing just so that I could learn to listen and pay attention more effectively.
So would you say that your other senses are more acute?
I would, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I would phrase it as I'm much more sensitive to things going on around me.
Yes.
Because I have to pay attention.
Right.
In a way that I've never done before.
Because you obviously have hearing aids that help, but you're supplementing that, I'm assuming, then with lip reading to a degree.
Lip reading.
Mm-hmm.
But you know something? As much as I try my best to lip read, and I'm relatively okay with it,
yeah.
This is what I experience now. I experience people communicating to me in a way that I never thought even existed.
Hmm. How's that?
In their being. Subtle micro expressions, the way the body shapes and moves.
Right.
When someone comes close, they're comfortable with intimacy. When they step back, they need a little bit of space to express themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Subtle. It's so subtle.
You sound like a mentalist. You know, I always feel that in mentalism,
yeah,
that you have to be very conscientious of your environment and of what people are saying. So this way, particularly, let's say, like, if you were going to be a psychic, and so that you're trying to do a sitting with somebody, that by looking at what they're wearing and how they're responding and if they're nodding, or, you know, maybe you can get the idea of whether that you're going the right direction or not. So you have to be very aware of how they're reacting.
Yes.
So it seems like that this has probably helped your magic, I guess, as well.
Well, considerably. Mm-hmm. And I have to give credit to Slidini.
Why? How?
Because I'm proud to say I'm a first-generation student of Slidini. Mm-hmm. I studied with him in New York.
Mm-hmm.
I never saw him again. But he got me present to the fact you must listen to your audience.
Right.
You must pay attention to the people. Watch them closely. Study their mannerisms. Study your own mannerisms. Pay attention to how people respond to you in performance.
Right.
And I'm thinking, but this is a life skill. It's not a magic skill.
That's exactly right, which is good if you are not even in magic, particularly, let's say, if you're in sales or something.
There are
things that you can do, like mirroring, for an example.
Exactly.
I mean, I noticed that, like, you and I are both kind of leaning the same way then
yes.
right now. Because if you're mirroring what someone's doing, crossing their legs or whatever they're doing, then they feel as if that if it's not too obvious that you're doing exactly right after they make a move, then you kind of mirror that. But if it's more subtle, then they are more attuned to thinking that you're a friendly person and more engaging, and they will open up to you more.
Yes, this is the secret of rapport. Mm-hmm. And for me now, given my circumstances, rapport with people is everything.
Right.
Being warm, being open, being receptive, being responsive, engaging. Yeah, this is the access to making really deep, lasting connections with people.
Right, right.
This is the one thing I love about this convention. Okay, magic is the context, but I'm just looking at pockets of people around me who are obviously friends, happy to see each other
sure.
again.
Sure.
How much further are we going to get ahead in life? who knows, this conversation can have a dramatic impact on somebody suffering right now, whoever hears it.
That's true.
I have to bring this conversation into our situation because I was very sad when I heard Daryl passed away. I thought to myself, didn't he have anyone close to him that he could have spoken to? I was really, really sad.
Right.
I actually had tears in my eyes because I remember the last time I saw him. We were in a car together driving from Helsinki Airport to Kouvola to perform a festival in Finland, me and Daryl.
Right. And of course, you had no idea about his depression or whatever issue he might have been.
We were both jet lagged, so, but we were just trying to recover. I was trying to make light conversations, and I watched him perform, and I thought, this is one gifted performer.
Right.
Because I've known him since I was 18.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say we were close friends. Let's just say we had a great admiration of each other's professionalism and technical expertise.
Yes.
He was a great hero to me, and I'll tell you why. We first met at Tannen's Jubilee, upstate New York, at Brown's Hotel, Lake Sheldrake. He was there with Paul Harris, Michael Amar, the magic hedonist.
Hedonist, right, sure.
It's the Saturday morning, and it's the close-up gala. I'm a nervous wreck.
Right.
I'm a nervous wreck, Scott. And I said to Daryl, Daryl, I'm really nervous about the show tomorrow. He said to me, why? He said, before you came to America, did you practice? Yes. Did you rehearse your script? I said, yes. Did you rehearse the show? Thoroughly. He said, so what's the problem?
Yeah.
He said, look, you've got to reach a point where you're technically confident. So what do you mean? You've got to know for yourself that you can do it. This is a gift you give yourself. Nobody will give it to you.
Right.
You can't go to the gym and expect your trainer to do the press-ups for you and lose weight.
And lose weight, right, right.
So you've done the practice. Now, just accept the fact that you're going to be slightly apprehensive. I said, what do you mean? Apprehensive? No, I'm nervous. I said, no. You're not nervous. You're apprehensive. You don't know what's going to happen while you're doing your show. When you're nervous, it means you're unsure of yourself. When you're apprehensive, there's an uncertainty in the outcome of the performance. You don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
You don't know if the audience are going to like you. The only thing you have control over is that you do the job and do it well and hope for the best. Be committed, but without attachment to the outcome.
It's important to be prepared, certainly.
Sorry?
It's important to be prepared. And if you're prepared, then you have control, better control of the situation,
well,
of whatever might happen.
You've got control over the one thing and the only thing that matters, your emotional state before you walk out, calming your nerves, getting those butterflies to calm down.
Fly in formation.
Exactly, and just deliver the best performance you know how,
right,
and honestly express yourself.
Right.
If you do that, then the odds are you'll get a favorable response from people.
Well, how do you, I'm sure that you've had some nerves, you know, going out beforehand,
yes.
So how do you get your butterflies together.
Well, given the conversation I just told you,
I'll be
honest and say I survived the experience of performing for Harry Lorraine, Sly Deeney, Frank Garcia, all the heavy hitters. They were all in the front row.
Yeah.
It's the best thing that ever happened to me as a magician. Do you know why? It was my baptism of fire in front of my heroes. And my nerves were as steady as a rock.
That's wonderful.
How do I know that? Because Harry Lorraine came up to me and said, Michael, that was terrific. Sly Deeney said to Alan, you come to New York after convention? He says, yes, bring the boy. I give him a lesson.
Wow.
Spent 4 days with Sly Deeney. That's how I know. So whenever I have moments of doubt about my ability, guess what I say to myself, Scott? I said, Michael, what needs to happen during your performance for you to feel proud of yourself?
Right.
I said, I need to go out there like a champion and perform with zero fear and deliver the goods.
Right.
And it doesn't matter who's watching. Let them watch.
Right.
Because I got validation from my heroes.
Right.
They're all gone now. There's young kids at this convention looking for validation, and I'm there to give it to them. And you understand that?
I know exactly, and that's so important, I think, that we as older people and mature in the business and magic who have seen it, been there, done that, encouraging the youth by letting them know, not only with our applause, but afterwards. I make it a point to the guys that I have seen, I've never even met before, the Asian fellows or whomever, I recognize them and I'll say, did a great job.
Exactly.
Very good. You know, pat them on the back and they say, oh, well, thanks, you know.
Yes, yes.
And they don't know who I am, you know, but I just think it's important that they get that affirmation.
I'm so glad you said that, because let's consider this for a moment. We are at the 4F convention right now.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a boy, I dreamed that I could do two things as a magician in my life that would meant the world to me. That I could appear at the Magic Castle,
yeah,
and I could be good enough that I would get an invitation to come to 4F.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's an invitation-only event.
That's right.
For the world's best sleight-of-hand magicians.
Right.
And we celebrate each other. Do you realize this is the only convention that actively acknowledges all the performers with a Bachelor of Arts degree?
I hadn't thought about that, but that's true. Other conventions have contests, and you have to win the contest to receive some sort of a physical attaboy kind of,
yeah,
kind of thing. But here you're right, that by
we
your
get,
performance...
We get an acknowledgement as you are a magical PhD.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm going to say something interesting. I did not do very well when I was at school.
Okay.
I left school with zero grades.
Hmm.
I did not go to university. I have no PhD in any other subject,
yeah,
other than magic. And I've got nothing to say that I have. But I'm hoping by the end of tomorrow night,
yeah,
I'll deliver a performance worthy of a PhD.
Great.
Because this is my third time here.
Yes.
And
yes.
I'm going to put that certificate on my wall and be proud of it.
I've got mine hanging.
I'm serious.
Yes. I've got that next to my MIMC. I mean, it's important to me. You know,
I've got respect for all the magicians here. Yeah. Why? Because they were invited.
Yes.
And let's acknowledge the Koreans and the Taiwanese that are here.
Yeah.
Some of them are first timers and they performed well. I'm going to watch the show tonight.
Yeah.
Because I want to see what these guys are doing. Because in that part of the world, the community of magic is really, really strong.
Yes.
Okay.
You know, I was just talking with Juliana Chen mm-hmm. earlier today, and she was saying about how that in China, because that they are restricted as to not being able to see Google and some YouTube things and whatnot. However, the magicians are learning from some YouTube videos of other people, and so of the Koreans and Taiwanese and others, Japanese, other Asian. But the point is that they are not learning things on their own. They are copying these others. And I was saying, well, it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just like an artist that is, you know, painting someone else's style to begin with, because they learn the, you know, how to mix colors and how to, you know, shadows and form and everything, because from that, the same thing like with learning magic, and you're copying years ago like Lance Burton, or maybe today it's Chris Angel or who, or David Blaine or Dynamo or Darren Brown or whomever. People are copying their styles because they're famous, and then they realize, you know, if I do this a little bit differently, and eventually they get their own style if they continue. I mean, I don't think, obviously, no one's going to be successful of being somebody else. You're only going to be successful as being yourself, you know. And so you have to eventually shed those clothes of shed that clone, I should say, of whoever it is you've been copying, and be yourself, you know.
Yes, I know exactly what you mean. And this was a big issue for me growing up, because I had no access or thought process about who the hell am I?
Yeah.
What's my style? I wasn't even thinking like that. All I knew was Lorraine, Marlowe, and Vernon were my heroes when it came to card magic.
Right.
Slidini gave me the psychology.
Right.
Rene Lavand, I was inspired by his passion and delivery.
Mm-hmm.
And that inspired me to put a little bit more emphasis in my words, my script, my diction. Okay. The pieces of the puzzle started to finally take shape. So if you were to ask me, what's my style, my identity?
Right. What is your style? What is your identity?
I'll tell you.
Okay.
I'm a world traveler.
Yeah.
I enjoy eating in the nicest restaurants. I enjoy the nicest hotels.
Good.
I enjoy good fellowship.
Right.
I enjoy creative conversations. I'm a raconteur, a storyteller. Put a deck of cards in my hands and they come to life. I would not look out of place if you put me in a casino.
Right.
Or the 4F convention. This is the world that I inhabit.
Right.
And I have an existential mindset in terms of, how do I choose to live?
Mm-hmm.
What's important to me? What can I create today?
And I can see that too.
You know,
certainly in your style, your dress, yes. your diction. You know, even though, as you've shared, that you hadn't completed education at certain levels, that's immaterial because you study the school of life, you know, basically, and have achieved a certain level of success. And I remember that was something that it seems like Marvin Roy had said, that you don't have to be in a millionaire to have the life of a millionaire as a magician, because that they treat you so well and you get to fly wherever, you know, that.
It's funny you mentioned that. I used to read about this amazing brotherhood of magicians.
Yes.
Where you will always get the support you need, no matter where you are in the world. Scott, I have to tell you, this has been my experience.
That's true. I found
it
that
really
true.
Has.
Yeah, literally in the world. And it has expanded so much, just like we were talking earlier about the social media, that everybody's involved and they know each other also. So when you travel, they know who Michael Vincent is, you know.
And you know what? Recently, I had a few friends come over to London, and before they came, they said, Mike, I'd like to do a workshop. What do I need to do? I said, well, tell me the nature of your workshop. Okay, all right. I can tell you right now, you may not get a full crowd, but I can certainly support you in getting a committed group of individuals that would enjoy what you have to share. I made it happen.
That's great.
He made money, and he left happy. That's my friend Jason Ladany.
Oh, yeah. Good.
Jason is stunning.
I'm booking Jason's lecture tour in the U.S. right now.
Well, let me tell you, you made a right move, because he's going to bring a beautiful conversation to your community. Mm-hmm. And it's not just the card magic. And let me tell you, for the guys listening that's in your community, sure, come prepared with your cards and notebooks, but come prepared with a bigger conversation, because he comes with an open heart and mind, and he's willing to share.
Yeah.
If you've got a business question, ask him. If you've got a question about character and identity, ask him. He won't hold back.
Yeah.
That's what I loved about him, and that's what I loved in terms of what he brought to the conversation. We had a nice venue, organized it.
Yeah.
We all paid him. We all had a lovely meal together, and he shared freely. I'm very excited for your group.
Well, I've got, I don't know, a couple dozen cities who have already booked him, you know, for this. And when he comes through Houston, I intend to have him sit down in my home.
Is he going to come to your home?
Yes. I'll have him, we'll sit down like this and do a conversation, have him on the
podcast. What month is he coming to your home?
July, I believe.
July?
Yeah.
Okay. Keep me posted, because it might be during FISM. I don't know what my plans are around
that.
Mm-hmm. We'll see. Okay. I was talking. I just lost my train of thought.
No, he was. I've got him actually going around, I want to say, starting in June through July.
Yeah. So he's a fine example of a dedicated magician, card man, businessman, entrepreneur that's making his own way in this craft
and
of ours.
He's a sharp dresser, a lot like you.
Oh,
and,
he's
you
know, crisp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I see him as being, you know, a guest of certain clientele like you.
Yeah.
I mean, I can see him as being a very much of a counterpart. You know, and I think it's just you need to know who you are also.
Yeah.
And I say that because there are so many who would say, you know, children's parties and bar mitzvahs and trade shows and corporate parties, and, you know, they do everything. And we all do, that's fine. However, I think that you should find your niche and specialize in that and go as deep as you can to try to keep your soul vision. In other words, that whenever I decided I'm going to go in the corporate market and stay in the corporate market, when I get people calling me for children's shows, if it's one of my clients, not a problem. Or if it's a holiday party where they're, you know, for the company that they're also having families, that's fine too, because I can entertain for them. But if it's just a birthday party, I'll say, look, I can recommend some people who could do children's parties because they are fantastic. I'm fantastic in my venue with my focus, and just as they are with theirs. And so anyhow, I think it's important that you kind of know who you are also, and who your clientele, if you want your clientele to be that. If you want to be a street magician, that's fine too. You know, there are a lot of people who will follow David Blaine and Dynamo and others, you know, who want to do something just for the fun of it. I mean, they're not making a living then necessarily, but they carry some stuff in their pockets and they buy the newest thing from Illusionist or Penguin or Sans Mind or somebody, you know.
Yes.
As opposed to really doing some of the knuckle-busting things like that you do, or some people that we have, you know, here at the 4F, you know, who are, you know, who are really dedicated to the art of...
The art and conjuring, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know, it's funny. You mentioned David Blaine and these various magicians that have come up of late.
Right.
I remember seeing Jim Cellini perform on the streets
in
New York when I made my first trip to New York. And I thought I'd just stepped out of a time machine because he was just like the street magicians I'd read about in Milburn Christopher's Illustrated History of Magic.
Right.
I thought, wow. And the magic he did was beautiful.
Yeah.
I didn't know he was a student of Slidini until probably a few days later.
Mm-hmm.
But it was wonderful. And he's an example of someone that found his niche.
Yeah. Yeah, Chris Capehart's another one, you know, and Eric Evans, and Jimmy Talks a Lot, and obviously a Cosmo. There are some guys who are just wonderful. Street with Johnny Fox, you know, just some great street.
He passed
magicians.
Away recently, didn't he, Johnny Fox?
I believe he did.
Yeah,
I know he was ill. I don't know if he did. I think that he did.
I think I read that on the...
It seems like that's right. He had pancreatic cancer or something, I
believe. That's a shame. Jimmy spoke a lot about him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Yeah, but I remember, seems like he did, was it him or Gazzo? I think it was Johnny who had...
Yeah.
I saw him at a Renaissance Festival one time. It's just the way they treated kids. I think it was Gazzo because he had some kid up there and he gave him like this, you know, plastic bag, you know, it was a clear Ziploc or whatever, and he gave it to a kid and said, hey, here's a space helmet, you know, put it on your head.
Yes.
Anyhow, not really appropriate, but but I guess the point is of just trying to know who you are and who your audience is, and that's fine too, you know.
Yes.
But like people who are working in restaurants, I work in restaurants, and you want to use that as a springboard into getting other kinds of work. But if 15 years later you're still in the same restaurant and you're wondering, why am I not
progressing?
Exactly. Well, there are reasons for that, but that could be because you didn't have a plan. You know, in my case, I like working in restaurants, you know, and that I had extra shows and things that I got as a result of that. But I, like, for an example, my buddy Charles Green III had started with restaurants, wanting to parlay that into more corporate work, into trade shows, and that's exactly what he did because he had that plan and followed that course.
Who is this?
Charles Green
III. Oh, Charles. He was from Hackensack, New Jersey, right?
Yeah, I think he lives out there now. Well, see, he lived in Houston. That's
Living in Houston?
No, he did whenever I first met him back in the 80s. I mean,
okay.
When I first met him, it was around 84, 5, 6, somewhere back in there.
Okay.
We used to hang out, and he sometimes would get other shows, and he would have me work the restaurants,
mm-hmm.
you know, because he had so many things. He was working like 8 restaurants or 9 restaurants
a week.
That's
right. He was busy.
Yes, right. Mm. Yeah. It was crazy. And so the type of magic that you do now, I love, you know, your lecture and everything, and I'm sure you've expanded on that. Do you have any books or anything out
as far as products I've produced, I created my own series of DVDs called The Tapestry of Deception.
Mm-hmm.
It was really a homage to Slidini and what I learned from him and how I applied his teachings to the magic that I enjoy doing, which is real close-up card magic and close-up magic in general.
Yeah.
I've produced a series of DVDs through Alakazam with Peter Nardi, The Classic Magic of Michael Vincent, Rhapsodies in Silver and Other Mysteries, Elegant Deceptions, and my last DVD project was called The Quest for Mastery. These were all box sets with a minimum of 3 to 4 DVDs in each box.
Wow.
So that's a
hours of stuff.
That's a lot of information on there.
Yeah.
I'm very proud of those DVDs. It's funny
too.
Because
goodness.
They were relevant for the time that I did it.
Yes.
I'm not the person I am now that when I recorded those DVDs, I've evolved.
Yeah.
And so I've actually written a dissertation on cards to pocket.
Hmm.
You're going to see the routine in tomorrow night's show.
Okay.
I'm going to perform my handling for Di Vernon's Travelers.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
This is not an exaggeration, Scott. 4 signed aces will appear in 4 different pockets, and I will remove them from each pocket with empty hands.
Okay, I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Yes.
Maybe and think for a minute, but how? Okay,
I'm excited to share it because... I wrote the book. It's my dissertation. If I was doing a thesis for a university,
this would be
then I just might get a PhD for it. You never know.
That's right. You talked about going deaf, and I remember hearing about this on Facebook, I guess it was somewhere, you know, and saying
had
talked about this at the time, and that was something that just came on like overnight,
literally overnight. I woke up one morning, no sound, and it was a Friday morning, and there was a mild panic, but I had to stay calm because I had a show that night at the Magic Circle. Okay. So as you can imagine, my tinnitus was aggressive because I was getting slightly wound up and apprehensive about the show.
Yeah.
How am I going to manage? So I was fortunate in as much as I was able to do the job and entertain the audience. I had no volume control, so I was talking louder than I normally would.
Correct. I understand. Yeah.
But at least I got one question answered. I can still perform magic. That's right. The first thing. I went to see the doctor. He referred me, and they told me I've got sensory damage to my sensory nerve. They gave me steroid injections, and I had the experience of sound returning from one side of my head to the other.
Wow.
And they gave me the hearing aid that I've got now, so it supports me. I can hear you fine, but I have to concentrate, because if I wasn't, I would hear you.
Right.
But I wouldn't be listening.
It's just like what you were saying earlier when we were in the crowded restaurant, that it's hard, I'm sure, with people who have hearing aids, because I remember my dad had hearing aids, and when he would be in a restaurant, you just hear every noise, even though that you're trying to concentrate on your, you know, like when you're listening to somebody, you're looking at them and you're hearing that, you're screening out all the rest of the noise.
It picks up the whole ambience.
Correct. It's hard.
I don't have one of those sophisticated hearing aids which can cut out the ambient noise. I'm looking forward to seeing if I can get one.
Right.
That would be very helpful.
Right. What was that like in England, as far as that, kind of an unrelated subject there, but with the socialized medicine? I mean, as far as, did you get in like right away or to work
The what, sorry?
Socialized, don't you have socialized medicine?
What is that?
Where instead of having like what we would have is insurance that would be like an HMO or something.
Oh, we call it the National Health, right?
National Health, National Health.
That's where my tax goes.
Okay, yes.
To pay for the National Health.
And so that you can get right in fairly
easily?
I go straight in. Okay, I just wondered about that. And then,
yes, go straight in.
All right.
But I also have insurance just in case for private health care if I need it.
Yeah.
God forbid. So, but all of that's important. And you know what? Being a deaf magician, it's interesting because it got me present to a whole community of deaf people.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that, true.
And I spent time with deaf people, seeing how they navigate life and get on with it.
Right.
I even entertained an audience of deaf people. And I saw how deaf people appreciate the arts. They don't clap. They wiggle their fingers in the air.
Interesting. And so when you're performing, you're not talking with them.
Oh, I'm talking, but I've got somebody signing.
Oh, okay.
And I get the laughs,
right?
But I keep the magic straightforward and simple, nothing too complicated,
right?
And I get the appreciation, which is quite lovely. I had deaf awareness training,
okay,
and I learned the rudiments of finger spelling, and also they made me aware of different levels of support I can get for someone with hearing loss, like different types of alarms and buzzers, and electronic gadgets for the house in case there's smoke or anything like that.
Yeah.
Because I can't hear doorbells anymore. I can't answer the telephone. I run my entire business online now. I negotiate everything online. I can't remember the last time I had a phone conversation.
Wow. Yeah.
Probably 5 years.
Well, going back to that and kind of coming full circle and talking about social media, you know, with Instagram and others. So how many other kinds? I mean, do you use Tumblr and Instagram? And
I use Instagram
LinkedIn.
For my photographs.
Yeah.
But I also promote what I'm doing through Instagram. So I've got two accounts, one for my photography.
Yeah.
Another one for Michael Vincent Magic. I should say, actually, even though I'm still Michael Vincent Magician, I don't really feel like I'm a professional magician anymore, Scott.
Really?
Yeah.
That's an interesting comment. Why is that?
my business has taken a different shape. I don't see, I'm not negotiating for shows anymore. I'm not marketing myself for performances anymore. I spend more time promoting my academy, generating new students, coaching and training, new students, doing speeches and talks for companies that want a conversation on some aspect of communication. This is where I spend most of my time now, as far as my livelihood is concerned.
Do you incorporate magic within your speaking?
In some cases, yes, because I can, and it's relevant. In other cases, I just share the message, whatever's needed. When it comes to performances, I still perform, but not for money, just to keep myself in the game at the Magic Circle.
Right.
The public come and they see four magicians. We do 20 minutes.
Is that Monday nights?
So usually a Thursday or a Friday evening. And it's great. I'm doing 20, 30 minutes of close-up magic. A full set, not 10 minutes. I'm part of a crew of magicians that works different theatres around London. We put on shows for the public. They come and see us. We do 25, 30 minutes. It's lovely. Because I'm actually doing a show. I'm not going around tables. I actually said when I hit my 50th birthday, I don't want to be doing restaurants anymore. That, or corporate events anymore. That has all stopped.
Wow.
Dead.
Okay.
I'm not going back. Don't want to do it.
Already done that, been there.
Done it.
Moving on.
Done it.
Okay. What's your future? What do you want to do?
Okay. Here's my bucket list. Okay. I would like to go to the Maasai Mara and photograph the wild animals and the wildebeest migration. That's what I want to do. I want to experience the animals with a guide in the bush and take photographs. That's one. I would like to see my photographs appear in National Geographic because I think that's a beautiful magazine.
It is. That's not too ambitious of a...
I love that magazine to bits. And it would be a very proud day to see one of my images printed in that lovely magazine.
Right.
I'm expanding my academy. I want to see all of my students do well. I train them. I prepare them for their exam so that they can become members of the Magic Circle.
Do they come to your home to train or where do
Nope. My academy functions online and offline.
Oh, interesting.
The offline coaching, I have various locations around London where we visit and go for private conversations on magic.
Okay.
And that's very nice.
But online, they do what, Skype lessons or
all
something?
All Skype and Zoom video conferencing. Works
sure.
perfectly.
Uh-huh.
Yep, so I use that.
So you can do that wherever in the world, obviously.
Yep, one of my students lives in Austin.
Oh, really? That's
interesting.
Yes, okay.
Austin. I'm thinking of other things on my bucket list. I want to see the world.
As if you haven't already.
Well, there's places I haven't seen.
Okay, sure.
That I want to photograph.
Yeah.
I'd like to...
Like the Arctic?
Sorry?
Like the Arctic? You want to go up to the north?
I don't do well in cold weather, but I say yes for the simple reason it's a very mysterious place to photograph. And if I'm with professionals that understand it and how they survive, I would do it.
Yeah, I talked with someone once who went to the Antarctic, and they were saying that there has only been a handful of people. Far less than 1% of the entire world's population have ever been there.
Yeah.
You know, and then, of course, the animals that have died, their carcasses are still there because they're frozen in time, basically. It's interesting.
I want to photograph New Zealand.
Oh, well, golly, yeah.
There's South Islands.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Australia, Ayers Rock. Photograph it.
Yeah, Ayers Rock.
India, Bali. I want to see it once.
Once, yeah.
And capture it.
Okay.
And I'll take a few decks with me along the way and bring some magic to that part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because it's a beautiful thing to share with people.
Right.
As far as magic's concerned, guess what?
I've already done it.
I have no attachment to whether I appear on television again. But if I'm asked, I will take it.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because I can do it. Mm-hmm. And I can do it well. And you probably know my last appearances were with Penn and Teller.
That's right. You were on Penn and Teller Fool Us.
Yes, right. Mm-hmm. I did two appearances, and I'm very proud of what I did there. It wasn't about fooling them. It was just about showcasing my work and getting a favorable response from the audience.
You got that.
Yes, and getting a good level of respect back from Penn and Teller.
Right.
You know, fooling them would have been nice, but guess what? Not important.
Had you contacted Mike Close or Giant Thompson, or did they reach out to you? As far as who were the producers, how did you get on?
You know, it's funny you say that. I got an email from them to come back for a third time.
But the first time, I mean, as far as
The first time. Yeah, they contacted me.
Now, was that in the UK version?
In the UK. They contacted me. It was successful. They invited me back again for round two.
Yeah. And now they're doing it in the US, of course.
They're doing it in the US. I actually sent an email first, and the response I got back was, well, you've been on it twice again already, so we're not, we can't have you back. I said, okay, not a problem. And then they sent me another message last year.
We would like to
talk to you about coming back on the show. And I was very clear. I said, look, my magic's not going to fool them.
Yeah.
I'm too much of a classical magician. They're going to know what I'm doing. If I come back on the show, it's for one reason only. I want to showcase my work and be paid for it.
Yeah.
That's it in a nutshell. Uh-huh. And if we can negotiate reasonable terms, then we can create something nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what's important to me.
Right. Interesting. Well, it sounds like you got a good bucket list going there. Of things.
Say that again?
You have a good bucket list of things you want to
do. Well, yeah.
And so, yeah.
And you know what?
And a good plan.
Just make a difference along the way as we go.
Make a difference.
Yeah, exactly. That's what's important to me right now.
Well, I was just going to wrap up about that very thing because the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. And I always ask.
It's called?
The Magic Word Podcast. Okay. And so I always want to know what people have as their magic word. So
the magic word.
Yeah. So it could be a word or it could be a phrase, you know, whatever is yours, and it could be to make a difference. But
what would
you say?
Oh, that's good. Yes.
What is your magic?
I can give it to you.
That's here.
Who I am as a magician, who I am as a teacher, lecturer, speaker, coach. My intention is very simple. I intend to leave the craft of magic better than I found it.
That's beautiful. Yeah,
that's great. It.
Yeah, and that's good for life. You know, just leave it better than you found it.
Leave it better than I found it.
That's great.
And my legacy will be found in my students.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mike, that's great.
Thank you
very much for being my guest over here.
Oh, you're
today.
Welcome. I really appreciate this conversation. Thank you for having
me. You're welcome, my friend. And so, for the Magic Word Podcast, that was great. That was Michael Vincent, and this is Scotty Out.
Wow, that certainly was a lot of inspiration from one great magician. I'm glad we had a chance to sit down and chat, and that's one of those things that's worth going back and listening to a time or two, because he had so many great pieces of advice, just pearls of wisdom to give us. And again, inspirational from the standpoint that he is living such a great life despite some hurdles that he's had to overcome and does every day. So what a guy. Thank you, Michael, very much for being my guest on the Magic Word Podcast here this week. And thanks very much, of course, for being my friend. It's just been wonderful. It is wonderful knowing you. It's been wonderful to have you again as my guest. So thanks, Michael. And thank you again, listeners, for tuning in and listening to this episode. All right, well, now it's time for a short review of a trick that's available from Murphy's Magic Supplies. This week, we're going to talk about Key Prediction by Richard Griffin. This is an effect where basically you have some keys and a watch fob, and you place that down in front of your volunteers or spectators, and you then place out a number of objects, and we'll get to those objects later, but basically they can have a free choice of whatever they want, and whenever you turn over the watch fob, that on the other side of there is the correct prediction. So in other words, if they have a credit card there, or they have a key, a pencil, they could have, if you want to do ESP symbols, it could be a wavy line or circle, square, something like that. If you want to have something that you want of your own, also there are some other options that you can make your own prediction, basically, with this gimmick that you get. The effect is just that. Again, it's a very straightforward type of prediction. You can have a number of objects, and you can use Magician's Choice down to just a few, and then finally having the ones that you need, in which they do have a free selection, certainly among four different objects, whatever they want. But getting it down to that four, you might want to use Magician's Choice to get to that point. But the effect itself is based upon an Alcoran medallion, and also a combination, I guess, of that and Don Wayne's room service, where, again, basically that the you have a prediction of whatever it is that they say. Whenever that you pick up the watch fob, turn it around, show them that is what's actually engraved on this little watch fob. And then they could actually turn it over themselves, which is part of the beauty of it. When you handle it once, put it back down, and then call attention to the fact that they had a free choice of whatever, allow them to turn it over, and it can be in their hands, and that is engraved onto that fob. A nice little trick, something that I would recommend, I guess reluctantly or with some hesitancy, and I only say that because it does require you to carry around some gimmicks in order to do this. It has a lot of applications, not just to using the things that it comes with, but I was thinking like of other trade show applications, or if you were going to be going to perform for a group of people who you know their names, or there are four people at a table, let's say, and you know in advance the names of the people, they can choose someone and that would have their name then on that, for an example. Or again, you could have a company logo or the products that a company may offer, their different product lines, four different lines, and whichever one they select that they use the most, then they turn it over and has that that particular service or product of whatever that is most important to them. Anyhow, some different variations. I like that. I say with some reluctance or some reservation, I say that only because there are other ways of accomplishing this in a much more organic way, I guess, in which that you would just use a magician's force. Because kind of in my opinion, I think magicians like to have gimmicks. We like to have things in different ways which that the audience can't go back and figure out what we said or what we did in order to accomplish the ends to our means. And so a magician's choice is something that a lot of magicians will poo-poo, but I don't think you should. Particularly if you go back and read David Berglas's ideas on the magician's choice, he has just some wonderful touches on that, and I would recommend reading that in one of his books then as well. But the point is that this is something that is more of a gimmick. Well, it is a gimmick, or gimmicks, I should say. And it's but the handling is fairly clean. It's just something else to kind of carry around your pocket. But if you have a set of keys and you have something else that's already engraved on that, and you can force that through whatever your various methods that you want to do with a deck of cards or magician's force or whatever. So I think that there are other ways of accomplishing to get the effect, but this is a pretty clever little device. And I think you show the boys at the magic clubs, I think that they would enjoy that because it is quite novel. So there you have it. Something I kind of like, kind of recommend. And again, that's called Key Prediction by Richard Griffin. All of these things that we talk about on the Magic Word Podcast are things that are available from Murphy's Magic Supplies and available on our website at themagicwordpodcast.com. I know that several of you will listen to the podcast through iTunes or through a podcatcher, or you're listening to it on the phone and really don't ever visit the website, but I would encourage you to do that because there's so much more material, much more content that's on there, including some videos. Like this week, I've got a copy of a video that of Michael Vincent's performance at the Magic Castle. Also, some other photos that are candid photos that you haven't seen that are things that I'd taken when I was with him at the 4F convention here this year. So that's just one example, but other kinds of things then as well that you get a lot more content on there. Also, that I would recommend while you're at the web, themagicwordpodcast.com, is to stop by, hit the tab that would say become a friend of the Magic Word, to watch a video, short video, just to understand more about why that we are soliciting funds in order to have patrons to help offset some of our costs that we have associated with producing this podcast. I do so appreciate the listeners, each and every one of you, whether you have the means to donate or not, if it's a one-time donation or perhaps annually, quarterly, or if it's something that you want to do monthly, in any denomination, it is perfectly fine with me and certainly appreciated, and you are rewarded as well. We have some perks that are available at different levels depending upon how much that you pledge. Well, anyhow, thank you very much again for listening, and I think it's about time probably to wrap up until next week. So, until next week, stay well, get booked, and leave the craft of magic better than you found it. Good advice. This is Scotty out.